You're listening to the Hippie Haven Podcast, where we have real-life conversations about all things hippie, from veganism to zero waste to tiny living and everything in between. I'm your host, Callie. I'm a nomadic entrepreneur traveling the United States in a van with a mission of encouraging people to live an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. With this podcast, I want to show you how easy it can be to take small steps that make a big difference in saving our planet. Let's get started. Today, I'm chatting with Stephanie Grant, who is the boss babe behind Twinkle Apothecary, her line of natural beauty and wellness products. In this episode, she tells us about her journey from being an actress in LA to becoming a single mom, moving back home to Oklahoma, and opening her business. We also talk about why her son is an entirely vegan, how she creates her essential oil perfumes, how a mindset change helped grow her business, and why we both consider working late to be a form of self-care. This episode is a bit longer than our scheduled 30 minutes, but Stephanie and I just had so much to talk about, and I wanted to share it all with you. So tell me about yourself and your background.
Well, my background is varied. I grew up in Oklahoma, went to college in Dallas, majored in business with a focus in marketing. In college, I always kind of thought I wanted to have my own shop someday. So I went to work in retail after I graduated and realized that I hated it. So I kind of spent a lot of time like just having no idea what I was going to do with my life. I got into acting actually and pursued that in Dallas and then eventually moved to Los Angeles and studied acting there and auditioned for a whole lot of commercials. When I was in Los Angeles, I got married, had a baby, got divorced, ended up a single mom. Then I had to find a job, so I had to put the acting thing on hold. So I went to work in fashion production, and that's really what got me thinking about starting a more sustainable kind of business. At the same time, I was really fully committing to living a vegan and cruelty-free lifestyle. So I was going through all of my personal care products, all my, you know, everything you use, and like, is this vegan? Is that vegan? Trying to change everything out. And I had a really hard time finding a deodorant that I liked, so I started making my own. And the first time I ever mixed up a batch of deodorant in my kitchen, I knew that that was what I wanted to do. So I called my parents and I told them I wanted to move back home. I had this business idea, and they were like, "What's your idea?" And I was like, "Well, I have this idea for deodorants, like a deodorant company." And they were like, "Okay, well, we'd love for you to move back home." So I moved back home with that intention of starting a business, not having any idea what I was doing, but I just kind of dove in. 2.5 years later, here I am.
You said it was working in retail that made you want to start a sustainable business. What was it specifically about retail that brought that up?
Well, I think that I grew up loving fashion. I grew up like totally, I mean, I was in Oklahoma City and it's not the most fashionable place, but I was like obsessed with Vogue magazine. And then when I went to college in Dallas, like retail's huge there. I mean, they have like the best shopping. And I was just loving it all. I just want to be a fancy lady in all my designer clothes, you know, it was just fun and creative and like, you know, cute stuff is fun. So I was like, well, one thing I always wanted to have my own business someday. So I thought I wanted to work, have my own retail store. And it quickly, very quickly, like after I went to work at Neiman Marcus in Dallas and, just the volume, like the amount of stuff in a department store, I think it's kind of depressing because not that many people are buying all of this stuff. So where does it go? You know, that's what I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And then, I kind of, as an actor, you know, I kind of had a lot of retail jobs over the years just because what else do you do when you're pursuing acting? But, once I got divorced and became a single mom and had to get a full-time job, I went to work in fashion production, which is like, not on the sales floor, but I was actually the fashion production team in a fashion business is like the go-between between the designers, the buyers, and the factories. So I was talking to our factories in Asia. Again, it's like the volume of the waste that we're creating, I just could not get over it. It just really, really bothered me that we were just making all of these clothes that we were trying to get people to buy. People aren't buying them. We put them on sale. Then where do they go when they don't get bought? You know, it's just something that didn't make a lot of sense to me. I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this business thing. You know, does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I don't even want to think about how much waste comes out of the fashion industry. I've read articles here and there. I know it's something I need to do more research into, but I'm kind of scared to know, you know?
I mean, yeah, I had a small glimpse of it. I worked there for less than a year, I think, but just the amount of like samples back and forth being overnighted between China and Los Angeles, and like, it's just,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, if you're trying to be an eco-friendly like business person, it will make your stomach turn to think about it. So that was something. Because at the time I was transitioning into a vegan lifestyle, I was following lots of like eco-friendly brands and, you know, just trying to be more sustainable. It just wasn't aligning with where I wanted to be personally in my life. So I knew I wanted to do something different.
So why and when did you go vegan?
I have been a vegetarian since I was 13. I was always a big eater and like was never picky as a kid, but when we dissected a chicken leg in science class when I was in junior high, and just a chicken leg you buy at the grocery store to fry into a drumstick, you know, my teacher was like pointing out like, here's the tendon, here's the blood vessel, here's the ball and joint, here's this bone, that bone. And that was the first time I really put the two together, that this was a live being like myself. It had legs and blood and tendons, you know, and it probably didn't want to die. From that moment, I was like, okay, that's crazy that people eat this. That like, this shit is not good. I was kind of, you know, I was like, oh, what do I do? What do I do about this? And then it occurred to me that there are people out there who don't eat meat. They're called vegetarians. I was like, that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be a vegetarian. So I told my parents and they were like, well, okay. I think they thought it was like a phase, but I never looked back. I realized that I felt so much better not eating meat that I never, ever wanted it again. And so I was a vegetarian for a long time, and I was totally one of those people who was like, I could never give up cheese.
Yep, same.
Like it's so delicious. So I like put it on everything. And of course I thought that I was like being healthy and getting my protein, which now like I don't think dairy is healthy at all. So I'm like, oh God, it just makes me cringe to think about it. Going back to my varied background of how I got to where I am, before I moved to Los Angeles, I became a certified Pilates instructor. During that time, during my teacher training, I was like, I'm going to get in super shape. I'm going to be like at my best health. And so I was like, I've got to finally start keeping track of my protein and how much protein I eat, because everyone tells me you got to get more protein. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start eating more protein. So I started eating like more eggs, more dairy. I even tried eating fish. And to be honest, it made me so sick. Like I felt terrible. So I was like, okay, maybe forget about the protein. Let's take the opposite approach. So I was like, what if I stopped eating animal protein altogether? And so that's really where it started. It was really like a health diet thing to start with. And then, of course, the more you learn about animal agriculture and, you know, just the more you think about it, the more it became like an ethical issue for me.
Yeah, it was actually after, I think it was eighth grade science class when we had to dissect, you know, that like every high school or every middle school does it, like you dissect the frog. We did that. And I was vegetarian for, I think, about a year after that, until my mom finally, she was so against it. She finally pressured me into eating meat again. And so I was a meat eater again for quite a while. But yeah, it was terrible. It was so gross. I was like, this poor little frog, like, is all spread apart on this thing, and I'm supposed to slice it open and look at it. No. Oh, it was so gross. It makes me just, like, queasy to think about it.
I know. Me too. I can still remember it. I mean, I'm 35, and that was a long time ago. You know, I was, like, 13, and I vividly remember the guts of that frog.
Yes, it leaves such an impression on you. So where is your business now? How has it grown? What products do you offer? Because you said you started with just that deodorant, but I know you've expanded a lot from there.
Yeah. It originally was all about the deodorant. That was the first thing that I wanted to make and wanted to market because I was so frustrated that I was like, you know, I was a broke single mom and I was trying to be eco-friendly and vegan. And like, I kept spending all this money on products that weren't effective, that didn't smell the way I wanted them to smell. So anyway, I was like, I've got it. Someone's got to be able to do this, you know? And I was like, well, okay. So when I moved home and I started making deodorant, like really tried to make my formula, I went through at least a dozen batches that were terrible. And I was like, okay, maybe I can't make the best deodorant in the world, but I could definitely make it the cutest. And so that's kind of where I got into the idea of like building a whole brand. And like, I love the idea of matching your fragrances. I'm a very highly sensitive person, especially when it comes to smell. So I noticed that when I was getting ready for work, when I was working in LA, I was really slow in the mornings because I had all these different products because I was always trying something new, like the newest vegan thing. I would have to wait for one smell to like dissipate before I could put on the next item, which sounds ridiculous, but I realized it was really slowing me down. So I was like, what if like you could just match everything on your body, like deodorant, lotion, everything just matched. That's kind of, as soon as I perfected the deodorant, I kind of revisited that idea of making like a whole body care collection. Because I am such a sensitive person, especially when it comes to smell, I really got into the perfumery part of it. I was always intrigued by the idea of perfume and like the thought of having like a whole collection of fragrances, like one for day, one for night, one for winter, one for summer. I never found anything that I really liked. I would go to the mall or wherever and just like smell all of the perfumes. And I would find one that I think I liked and I would spray it on me. And probably like an hour later would regret it so much because it turned into something different and I didn't like it. But with natural fragrances, with the essential oils that I was buying to create my fragrances, I didn't have that problem. So I got really into the idea of like making fragrances that I actually liked and making a lot of them so you can have the variety and like change your scent. And so I got into matching your body care items, doing the perfume, and then the skincare happened really by accident. I never was really, when I first started, I really wasn't comfortable with the idea of people putting things on their face that I made because I didn't want to be like liable in case anything went wrong, you know? I was researching my deodorant ingredients one day and I realized I came across some like old folk recipes for like acne or whatever. It was like make a tapioca starch paste and put it on your face and, like a mask. And I was like, well, I've got a big bag of tapioca right here. Like maybe I'll just see what happens, you know? So I mixed up a few ingredients and tried it. And the first time I tried the powder cleanser, I mean, my mind was blown. It was so much better than any other cleanser I'd ever used before. So I was like, okay, am I doing this? Like I gave it to my mom and my sisters and like, what do you guys think? I don't know. Is this crazy? But everyone really liked it. So I was like, okay, we'll just add it on. And then of course, once you have a cleanser, I had to have a toner and a moisturizer to go with it. So I made my toning mist and my facial oil. And the idea was that the skincare would just be really basic, customizable, multitasking. Because I'm not like a big product person. I don't like having a million different products that I have to choose from every day. Like I like having something that I know works and I can just stick with it. But as I marketed my business and got feedback from customers, I got so many requests for different types of things. Like, well, do you have anything for this type of skin? Do you have anything for that? And I was like, no matter how many times I tried to say, well, it's for every type of skin. It's, you know, it's multitasking, customizable. But like, no, but I want something really specific.
So if you had to pick just one product and just one scent, what's your absolute favorite and why?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Because I have so many. Okay. So I was thinking about this earlier, and I was trying to think, okay, if I got rid of this, what would I replace it with? And I was able to think of like pretty much everything that I make. It feels weird saying this, like could be replaceable by something else. So I think what I would have to go with is my perfumes. And I don't know which one. I don't know which one is like the ultimate scent for me. But I couldn't live without my fragrances. I just like every day I wear a different one and they make me feel really good. And I love that I made it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to buy anyone else's perfume because I love the creative process in making them. And it always reminds me of where I was at that point when I made it, always invokes a certain feeling for me. And I just couldn't ever like get rid of that, if that makes sense.
Definitely. It was so hard for me when I visited your store in Oklahoma City back in December to pick like one scent type, because I was sitting there smelling them all. I finally settled on Adore. I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm still wearing it. I bring it out for special occasions, and I wear little roll-on. But I remember I was smelling, which ones was it? It was Nasty Woman was up there. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say, was there something called Goddess?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that was the third one. I was like, how am I supposed to choose? These are all so wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Goddess and Nasty Woman and Adore are three of my top sellers for sure.
So tell me about your fragrance blending process. Like, how do you come up with these scent ideas and how do you test them? How do you find the right ratios?
Well, I have two different processes. I have my signature fragrances like Adore, Nasty Woman, Goddess, all of those. They're very simple. They have to be because I use them in all of my different body care applications. So I have to be able to blend them quickly. I can't get too crazy with it because I would just, you know, I wouldn't have the time to make them. So I basically just, the ideas can come from anywhere. It can be like, you know, at first I started with four fragrances. I started with Basic, Mulholland, French Girl, which is now called Petier, and Pink Mafia. The idea was like, okay, I have one sweet, one earthy, one floral, and then one that's kind of fruity and spunky. I took those, and the process to make those was that I literally just took four smells that I thought would go good together. All of my signature fragrances have four notes in them. I took those smells and put a drop of each in the bottle, and then I just adjust the ratios from there. I add, you know, it all starts with one drop, and then whatever I want it to smell like more of, I add another drop of that. So it's very simple.
And then what about the naming process? Do you have the name first and you try to come up with a scent that fits it, or vice versa?
I'm trying to remember. When I first started, it's really weird that I did this because it's so random. But when I first got the idea to make the deodorant, and I was like trying to come up with what kind of fragrances I would want them to be, like what I wanted my brand to be. And I was coming up with names and fragrances that using ingredients I'd never even smelled before. I was like, I had this notebook full of ideas, and it was like Pink Mafia. I love that name. I don't know why. It just sounds like I wanted something that was sweet, but not too sweet. That was a little spunky and spicy and sassy. So I was making lists of like what ingredients I thought would sound like or smell like Pink Mafia, even though I hadn't even like ordered the ingredients to make them yet. So it's different for every scent. I'm not making any more of the signature fragrances because I feel like I have enough. So it's hard for me to remember. Well, like an obvious example is Nasty Woman. I was watching the presidential debates when that moment happened, and I had the combination of oils with me that make up that scent. It was lavender, cedarwood, frankincense, and patchouli. And I was really just putting them on me to try to stay calm because I was so like upset about what was happening with these debates. And but I wanted to watch because I wanted to see what was going to happen. So I was like, okay, to be really zen. I've got my essential oils. I'm going to get some aromatherapy going. And then that moment happened where he called her a nasty woman. And the next day, someone, I don't know, I said something like, I posted on Facebook, like, I should make a Nasty Woman perfume. And everyone was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And I was like, is it really? And then I was like, oh, well, obviously I know what it'll be. It'll be the oils I was wearing that night. So they all kind of have different stories. Mulholland is, I based that off of my neighborhood in Los Angeles. I used to take my son in his stroller and walk up the hills between Ventura Boulevard and Mulholland Drive. And in Los Angeles in the spring, which is like February there, this jasmine is blooming in everyone's yards. So I knew I wanted to create something really warm and floral. And so I thought jasmine, citrus, and like the warm grounding sandalwood, it just made sense to me. So they're all a little different.
How do you try to reduce waste in your business?
This is a hard one for me because I feel like there are a lot of ways in which running a business is inherently wasteful and it kills me. But obviously I try to provide eco-friendly packaging options. The plastic-free deodorant was a big one for me. Before I started my brand, I was really thinking about ways to be more sustainable. And no one was really doing like a biodegradable deodorant yet. Now lots of people are. But at the time, it was like you either had to buy the glass jar and apply it with your fingertips or use a plastic container. And so that was, I wanted both. Like I wanted to be able to roll the deodorant on my underarms and not have to use my fingertips, but I didn't want to have to use plastic. That was a big thing for me when I was first starting. And I didn't have the amount of products that I do now then. So that's really what it started with. And then as I added more skincare products and body care products, I kind of went through a lot of different packaging phases that I don't have record of now, thankfully. I mean, there might be some pictures out there online somewhere, but it was pretty ugly. And then one thing that I kind of really hate about it right now, and I'm trying to find a way to fix it, is that the frosted glass bottles I use aren't recyclable. And I didn't realize that when I bought them. I thought, like, it's glass, you just recycle it. You know, like, I should have done more research before I invested in it, because now I'm kind of stuck with them for the time being. If I switch to the clear glass, the lids don't match, and I'll have to reshoot everything on my website. And, like, you know, it's just, it's a big mess. So that's one thing I'm working on. And I'm also trying to find more ways to add more refill options, have more like a refill station in my store. That's something I really want to do. I have so many people coming to me and asking me if I can take back the bottles or if they can refill them or if they can bring them back and have me refill them. But that feels like, you know, you can't just refill a single product on demand unless you have a big batch made up, you know? So it feels like a big investment. I need more space, you know, those kinds of things are things I'm all kind of like working out right now. To be honest, that's it. I know there's more I can do. I feel like perfumery especially is kind of wasteful because I'll make something that sounds like a good idea and then decide I hate it. And so I have to get rid of it. I feel like I beat myself up about this a lot. Like I'm not, like it's never going to be good enough, you know? So I'm trying to just do my best and always do like try to do better. And then I also try to tell myself, like, no, you're actually doing really well. Like, you were one of the first brands to use a biodegradable deodorant tube, you know? So don't beat yourself up too much.
I was Googling. I was trying to see if, like, frosted glass was non-recyclable everywhere or what.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's everywhere. I mean, I haven't found any way to recycle it.
Yeah, all I was saying was like, oh, some specialty places will recycle it. But of course, no one has access to specialty places.
Yeah, I know. Like, I wish I had done better research when I first bought them, because now it really is going to be such a mess to switch them over, because like I'll have caps. Like, I don't know, but, you know, like I'll have caps that don't fit on those bottles. And, that, you know, it has to be done at the right time where I'm like, where I'm needing to reorder all of my packaging, if that makes sense.
Oh no, yeah, I totally understand.
So yeah, and then I've also thought about like ways I can reuse them. Like I thought about cutting the tops off and pouring candles, but I'm just, you know, I'm only one person You know, so it's like, what more can I do?
And I've heard with those like people that sell candles and like reclaimed wine and beer bottles and whatnot, that the process of cutting them makes them very fragile and delicate. And especially then when you're exposing them to the high heat of a flame for several hours, it makes them prone to like shattering.
Oh my
So,
gosh, I didn't even know
yeah,
that.
I've heard that is a problem. So I, but there's other options available with reusing them at least. You know, people that want to use
Oh,
them
yeah.
as little tiny, you know, like miniature flower vases or making their own like DIY stuff or filling them up with bulk, I don't know, sugar, chia seeds or some spice
Yeah.
that they need. So
Totally. Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing I want to be better about, like talking to people about who is, you know, because I do have so many people coming to me, like wanting to give me their bottles back. And I'm like, I really, like, I don't have space for them. I don't know. I can't sanitize them and reuse them. I mean, that is possible, but I don't have the equipment to do it right now. So I'm like, I would love to like be able to blog more about all the different ways you can reuse it, because I do, I use mine as flower vases. I use mine to like for DIY, because for some reason I still make DIY things at home that I don't sell, you know. So I think we all just need to be more aware of, instead of trying to like just pass off your waste onto someone else or just get rid of it, like bring it into your life and keep it there, you know, and use it.
What has been your proudest moment in running Twinkle Apothecary so far?
Being able to move out of my parents' house, probably. You know, because I moved in with them from Los Angeles, and I was broke in LA. Fashion production does not pay a lot of money, and being a single mom, the cost of childcare was just insurmountable. And I was having to borrow money from my parents every month just to get by. So moving in with them at the time felt like a more sustainable option, and I completely funded my own business. I used what was left of my 401k at my old job, and I got a $500 credit card. And so it was like less than $1,000 that I started Twinkle Apothecary with. And I think just the fact that I've been able to grow to the point where I am now financially sustainable on my own and being on my own 2 feet, I mean, that's huge to me. It doesn't sound like a lot to some people, I'm sure, because you know, I still don't make that much money, but I'm fully independent now, and that was my goal. And so that's something I'm really proud of.
And you have a gorgeous shop because I've been there myself. And your apartment, which I haven't seen, looks amazing.
And that too. I mean, I am pretty proud of my shop. It's my happy place. I just love being in there and seeing all the things that I made on the shelves. And not only that, but getting to meet the people who are coming in, and my customers are so amazing. They're just the best. I just love like getting to talk to them and hear what they think. And when people come in and bring their friends in, and I'll like overhear them like, "Oh my gosh, you have to try this and that, and you're just gonna die." Like, it makes me feel so good to know that I'm making something that people are enjoying and that they want to share with their friends. I just love every minute of it.
Now, tell me what it's like being a vegan parent, especially as a single parent.
I am vegan, and I'm very much vegan, and I have been for a long time, since you know, since around the time I moved to Los Angeles. Actually, no, I have a story about that. When I was pregnant with my son, I craved eggs and cheese every day, and I hate eggs. I hate eggs so much, but when I was pregnant, all I wanted to eat was egg salad, and so I had this like. It was like in Rosemary's Baby where she eats the raw liver. Like, that's what I felt like I was doing, you know, like this is like an out of body experience. Who am I? What's happening? This parasite has taken over me. So I did eat some eggs when I was pregnant, but as soon as I was no longer craving eggs, you know, I went back to being vegan, and I fully intended to raise my son completely vegan. And then once I got divorced, I had to give a little bit. I had to let my parents help me out. My mom moved in with me in Los Angeles for a year while I was looking for work. You know, he got exposed to some foods that I wouldn't have wanted him to if it had just been me and him. He's vegetarian. He's not fully vegan. But I talked to him about where his food comes from and what it's made out of. And he's kind of getting older now, and he's kind of putting the pieces together, like, okay, mom's vegan, she doesn't eat meat, cheese or milk, but I'm vegetarian, like sometimes I eat cow cheese, you know. So, you know, it's a delicate balance. I would love to just make him be vegan, but it felt like a situation where I had to pick my own battles with my parents, and, you know, co-parenting with my parents, which I never intended to do in the first place. You got to let some things slide. You know, it felt like, okay, I grew up eating dairy, probably not the end of the world if he eats pizza once a week, you know. So I had to become more flexible. But I am, now that we live on our own, I'm really trying to bring him into the kitchen with me at dinner time. And we are talking about what our food is made of and where it comes from. And I'm really trying to get him to eat more vegetables and just try new things. And he really is all of a sudden just become interested in like trying new vegetables. And we figured out a vegan cheese that we really like on our pizza. So when he's with me, he is vegan. I don't have any dairy in my house. But when he's not with me, that's not always the case. And so that's just something like, I think it'll work itself out in time, and I'm trying not to, you know, be too controlling about it. So yeah, so it's a process.
So how do you have those age-appropriate conversations with him? How do you decide how much to tell him and how much to wait until he's older?
I tell him everything. You know, I don't go into like gory details about how animals are slaughtered, but I think it's very important for people to understand at a young age where the things they're putting in their body comes from. You know, I don't know why that was hidden from me as a child. And I had to come to my own conclusion in the middle of science class when I was 13 years old. But I wish I had known sooner, because I would never have eaten meat, you know, so.
Mass propaganda.
Yes, exactly. I mean, especially, growing up in Oklahoma, this is beef country. And it was, you know, there was very much, you know, your great grandfather raised cattle and he'd be rolling over in his grave. Actually, later found out that that wasn't even true, because my great grandfather was an innovative farmer, and I think he'd be really excited about all the, you know, plant-based alternatives that people are coming out with now. That's just something like my parents tried to threaten me with when I first, you know, brought up the idea of going vegetarian. So I'm very open with him about everything. I have a little story about that. It's so dear. Since I moved into my new apartment, we're living on our own, he is going to school over on the other side of town where my parents live this summer. So a couple days a week, he stays the night with them. And their house is under construction, so they went to a hotel room last week because the painters were painting and it was really stinky. But anyway, they ordered a pizza, and I guess the pizza place made a mistake. They ordered a cheese pizza, but they got a pepperoni pizza, and the pepperoni was underneath the cheese. So they didn't realize it was until it was too late, and he had already eaten all this pepperoni pizza. So the next time I got him, we were having a conversation at dinner. I was like, so what'd you eat with Nana and Papa last night for dinner? And he was like, I had a pizza. He was like, it definitely was a cheese pizza, not a pepperoni pizza. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. And then he, like a second later, he goes, no, I'm sorry, mommy, it was a pepperoni pizza. They made a mistake and I didn't know I was eating pepperoni, and I'm really sorry. And I was like, it's okay, honey. You know, it was a mistake. Like, I'm proud of you for telling me, but I hope you don't feel badly. I know it was a mistake, you know? So he's very much aware of my views, and like, he doesn't want to eat meat, you know, because he knows what it is.
Have you ever faced any negative feedback to raising him vegan, you know, vegetarian with his grandparents? And if so, how did you handle it?
I think at first, There was a little bit of negative pushback. Not negative so much, just like them not understanding and them questioning, especially when I was pregnant. You know, they were like, well, are you going to be vegan? Like, are you going to be able to breastfeed him if you're a vegan? You know, like, and I was like, yeah, you can totally do that. Like, you can be healthy and be vegan. In fact, I think being vegan is even more healthy, you know? So at first there was a little bit, not so much negativity, but almost the defensiveness. I mean, my parents are great and they've always accommodated me with all my crazy ideas, you know, going vegetarian when I was 13, they were great about it. But I think there's a little bit of like, so are you going to force him to live the same way that you do, you know? And, you know, and the way I'm not, obviously I don't want to force him to do anything. I want him to make his own decisions, but I want him to have all the information that I didn't necessarily have when I was a kid. So there's a little bit of that, which, you know, the way I handle it is just being really open with my son and talking to him about everything. And then also there have been a few instances, like with his preschool, he was a really picky eater, last year and the year before that. And so I had the hardest time trying to find things that he could take for lunch that he would eat and that were healthy. So I finally got him to like, tofurkey slices. So I would give him his little vegan turkey sandwich to take to school. And he called it turkey, you know, because that's another kind of issue with raising vegan kids. I'm like, I'm calling his food chicken and turkey, you know, and meatballs, but it's not really, it's plant-based. And so it's like, how do you tell him how to describe that to his friends? Cause he's like, this is my turkey sandwich. And his teacher was like, that's not turkey. That can't be turkey. It doesn't look like turkey. What is that? And you know, he was 4 years old at the time. And so he really kind of had a little bit of a complex about it. You know, he knew that the food he was eating was different and it wasn't normal. I don't think his teacher meant to make him feel bad about it. She was just curious, but it made him not want to take his turkey sandwich anymore to school because he didn't want to have to answer questions about it. So, and I think that's something that's going to be an issue for him for a long time because it still is for me, you know, but that's just part of being vegetarian and vegan.
Yeah, it sounds like his teacher really just shouldn't have asked that, especially not in front of other kids.
Right.
Kind of totally. Singling him out of, yeah. You're different.
Yeah. And so that's a lesson I definitely learned, that going forward when he starts kindergarten next year, I'm definitely going to have a face-to-face conversation with his teachers about his food and what he brings and how I want them to react to it. You know, I didn't know I had to like have that talk with anyone, but now that I know, I'll be sure to like set some ground rules and some boundaries about it going forward.
Yeah. As a single mom and a business owner, how do you handle everything? And so flawlessly, because let's be honest, like you're a goddess. How do you do it?
Well, there's nothing flawless about it. there was a lot of struggle. I'm in a really good place now personally, and I'm feeling really good. My business is growing and I'm loving it. And, you know, like I said, I've been able to move out of my parents' house and everything feels really great right now. But before I got to this point, there was a whole lot of like garbage going on with me personally, and like not feeling like I deserve to have the kind of life I want to live, and, you know, just not knowing what I was capable of. I've gotten really in the past year or so, I've gotten really into meditation, because I realized how much anxiety was really controlling me. And I knew I had a good business idea and I was working hard at it, but I didn't trust it. I thought I had to just keep working harder and harder and harder and keep pushing myself, or I was never going to make it. I was going to be living with my parents forever. You know, I don't even know what it was that caused the shift, but a shift happened for me around this time last year, last summer, where I realized that I'm not a failure. I'm not the story that I've made up about myself. You know, a loser who got divorced and had to move in with her parents. And, you know, I don't have to push myself and struggle so hard to make it, because there's nothing wrong with me. So once I realized that and I was able to take a step back and take some time for myself and to just slow down and be quiet, that's when things really started happening for me with my business and everything. So the way I handle things is to take a lot of time for myself and slow down and love myself. And you can't resist the work, but you don't have to struggle in it.
It does. I'm dealing with, have dealt with, probably will continue to deal with a lot of the same feelings.
I think it's something every woman deals with, probably every person. You know, I don't know what it is about our society that makes us feel like we are incapable and broken and like bad people. You know, I don't know what it is about our world that makes us feel that way, but it needs to change.
It does. It definitely does. I've been dealing a lot lately with imposter syndrome, feeling like I'm, feeling like I'm not good enough, that I'm faking it, that I'm not ever going to be truly successful, even though I'm still really not sure what the meaning of success is for me yet.
Right.
I think for me, it's just to be able to live the life that I want to live, to keep traveling and to have a successful business that pays the bills. And those feelings are difficult. They definitely are.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Besides meditation, what does the process of self-care look like for you?
I think it's funny because this is a big part of my marketing and my business. But for me, it's something different every day. You know, we think about it when we look at it on Instagram and hashtag self-care, it's like a face mask or a manicure or a glass of wine. But really for me, it's, you know, one day it could be 5 minutes to shut my office door and meditate. And then, you know, sometimes it's doing yoga. Sometimes it's working. Sometimes it's working out a perfume idea. I think for me, it's really just taking a moment to check in with myself and figure out what it is that I need to do to make myself happy, to make myself comfortable, to make myself more present and ready to work and be a more present mom, you know, be there with my son. It's checking in to see what I need and being honest with myself about the answer, because it's something different every time.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one that sees like working as a method of self-care.
Yeah. I mean, I love my job.
Yes.
You know, we shouldn't have to like feel like we have to take a night off to me watching TV. That's fun sometimes. Sometimes that is self-care for me, like having a glass of wine and catching up on my favorite shows. But sometimes for me, self-care is diving into the perfume idea I can't get out of my head, you know, or catching up on production so I can take a break.
Exactly. Yeah. And they, you know, I've seen the quote of like true self-care is building a life that you don't need an escape from. And like, I just tried to go on a camping trip for my birthday. It was supposed to be a 2-night thing. And we spent 1 night there. And then first thing on my birthday morning, I was like, let's go back. Let's go back into town. Let's go back. I have so many ideas in my head, even though it's my birthday, even though I'm supposed to be relaxing, like I can't relax because I have all these ideas. I have these things that I want to do. Like I'm miserable. Like I want to go back. I want to work. Sometimes there is no like relaxing and taking a, you know, watching TV or whatever. It's like, no, what's right for me in this moment is to get this idea in my head out into the real world and see how it looks. And yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm right there with you. I totally get that feeling. I don't know if a lot of people understand that feeling. I think maybe it's something that comes with being self-employed and being a creative person and having all of these ideas. But I hope it's something that more people are, like, that we can talk about so more people can know that, okay, self-care doesn't mean you have to take a night off from work. Self-care means you do what you need to do to feel good, you know.
There, it is hard to find a balance, though, because it's there's this mindset of to be successful, you have to hustle 24/7. And that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. You know, none of us can hustle constantly. Right. We do need to take time off. But yeah, for the creative, self-employed entrepreneurs like us, it's, we don't always want to take nights off, even if we should be. We are so passionate about what we're doing that that's where we're supposed to be.
Exactly. Yeah, this is our passion. You should be allowed to like delve into your passion. That can be self-care.
What is your number one personal goal for the rest of the year?
I think to just go forward doing what I'm doing and not overanalyze it. Like I mentioned, I've been the past year or so, I've really gotten into meditation. I meditate, I journal every day, and I'm, you know, trying to work out all these personal things and trying, I spend a lot of time. I mean, a lot happened for me in the past year. I opened my store, I moved out of my parents' house, you know, so there was a lot to analyze and to plan and to figure out. For this year, for the rest of this year, what I would really like to do is just trust that I know what I'm doing and to go do my thing every day and not have to think about it all the time and work it out and analyze it and wonder about it, to just go forth and do it.
And what is the number one thing that you want to teach your son before he grows up?
I'd like him to know what it took me all these years to figure out until last summer, that there is nothing wrong with him, that he is, that he's beautiful and capable and smart, and that he doesn't have to feel badly about himself for no reason, that he can do anything he wants to do and that it's okay and that he's okay. I don't know why it took me so long to figure that out. So I would like for it to not take so long for him.
I had planned on that being my last question, but I guess that brings up one more for me of what struggles do you face as a woman raising a son alone in today's society? How are you trying to teach him and guide him around the many gender issues that we have today and the balance between masculinity and feminine? How do you handle that?
Oh, that's a really big question. There are a lot of different aspects to that. To be honest, I haven't thought about how I'll handle it with him because I've been too busy figuring out my own issues with men and masculinity and relationships. I'm at a point right now where I am very, very happy being single. And I really want him to not feel that he's lacking because he doesn't have a dad figure in his life. I don't have any plans. I never know, you never know what can happen. Maybe I'll meet someone and fall in love, we'll get married and have a family. But right now, that's not something that I'm looking for. So I want him to feel content with what we have right now. And I think he will, because I am very content right now. And I'm not trying to find, I don't feel like I need to have a man in my life. I don't feel like he needs a father figure. I feel like we're doing all right. You know, I don't know. When he gets a little older, he may have some different feelings about it. But I hope that for that aspect of that question, which is, how do I handle raising a son on my own, is that I just keep doing what I'm doing. And I'm happy. And I hope that he's happy. And I hope that that we never feel that we're lacking in that aspect. And then as far as raising him as a boy in our toxic masculinity-laced society, to be honest, I really hadn't thought about it. I'm just kind of hoping that I can be the best feminist that I can be, and that that's just his default. I think a lot of this, the new wave of feminism that we're experiencing right now, it's something we had to discover for ourselves. And I hope that with our kids, it's just kind of second nature, that women and men are equal and all of the genders are equal. That's something I think about a lot and I don't have the answer to, but I hope that what I'm doing sets a good example for him.
Yeah, and that was a big question. I'm sorry, I just kind of sprung that on you. But when I was listening to you, I was like, you know, that's something I've always wondered. I don't plan on having kids. I've known since I was 8 that it's just not for me. It's just, you know, not how my life is going to go. But it is something that I've thought of how do you raise kids today? How does a woman raise a son? How does a man raise his daughter? There's all these issues, and they're so delicate. And so I just felt like asking.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And I totally understand. Like, to be honest, I never thought I wanted to be a mom either. I feel like there are a lot of women out there who like can't wait to be a mom and are super into like all of the baby things. And that was never me. I was like, you know, I guess if it happens, it could be nice, but it was never like a goal of mine to be a mom. And so I think that's, my approach might be a little bit different because of that, because I'm like, okay, we're tied together in this life, me and you. So we're going to do it in our own way. And I don't know exactly what that'll look like because I don't have a great plan. I'm just kind of winging the mom thing, to be honest.
I feel like that's probably like the better way to do it though, versus being, you know, the helicopter mom and raising them in a bubble. So it sounds like you're definitely giving him authentic conversations. And even as a small business owner, as a single parent, you're able to give him so much one-on-one bonding time where you have these moments and you can talk to each other and have those conversations, even though he's 4 or 5?
He's 5 now, yeah.
5, yeah. I mean, that's rare that you guys have that, and it's beautiful.
You know, that's kind of why I started this business in the first place, because I knew working full time and the whole childcare thing, I felt like it wasn't the best setup as a single parent. So I knew I needed to have a job that was flexible, that I could do from anywhere, that I could not have to rely on daycare. You know, that's another thing that I'm really proud of that I've been able to create for myself is the life that I want to live with my child. You know, I have my freedom. I have the freedom to raise my son the way I want to on my own terms. You know, I rolled into work on Monday at 12:30 with my 5-year-old. There's nothing better than that to me. Like, I don't care if I ever get rich. I have my life set up exactly the way I want it.
The life that you don't need to escape from.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Stephanie, where can people learn more about you and get in touch?
My website, Twinkle Apothecary. It's all there. TwinkleApothecary.com. My email address is Stephanie@TwinkleApothecary.com. That's really it. I mean, my entire life is that website. So if you just go there, you'll be able to get in touch with me.
Hey guys, Callie here. Thank you so much for listening to the Hippie Haven podcast. Your support means the world to me. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and leave a review in iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It only takes 60 seconds, but it really helps because reviews influence how easily people can find this podcast in search results. We also have an exclusive community over on Facebook. So if you want to connect with me and other like-minded people, just type Hippie Haven in the Facebook search bar and join our group. Thanks again, and stay tuned every Wednesday for the next episode.